Good afternoon. Thank you all for coming and spending your lunch hour with us here at MoMA. I'm Peter Ely. I'm the curator of MoMA PS1. And we have this very nice tradition of artist talks subject to very strict time limits that we do around this time periodically. Some of you, probably very few of you, attended the last one that I organized, which was about abstract painting, which lent itself very well to this kind of format of a very strict 8.5 minutes. And after that, I thought it would actually be more interesting to hear from artists, and perhaps even some people who don't necessarily define themselves as artists, within this same frame and format, in part because I think it's difficult to talk about work that doesn't necessarily lend itself to an image or an object that can be photographed terribly well. So I've invited four artists here today, Alejandro Cesarco, Angie Kiefer, Matt Keegan, and Alexander Singh, all of whom have elements of their practice, even if they are object makers, that expands into writing, publishing, in some cases performance, and teaching. And so I hope I'm as interested probably as anyone else to hear how they summarize their practices in this context and describe them to a wider public. So they'll go in alphabetical order, and Alejandro is first. Afterwards, we'll convene for some further discussion. Thanks.
So, hi. Good afternoon. I'd like to introduce this talk by reading a brief text that attempts to preface and outline some of the main interests and concerns that run through my work. In general, I'm interested in addressing the act of production as a practice of reading. And by reading, I mean to include the network of relations that every text proposes and to understand how meaning is possible and by what means. I am referring to the conditions that make possible the text and the consequences or effects that this text produces. In some ways, it is the framing, which is to say, the context and the reader's own expectations of the text that ultimately constitute the text itself. This idea hints at defining a set of responsibilities for the reader, or in this case, viewer, and at the very core of these responsibilities is an attempt to define reading as a creative, generative act. This, in turn, brings me to the idea of translation, which seems to be a perfect metaphor for the possibility of reading as writing, the possibility of engaging closely and intimately with a text. The idea of translation and the notion of narrative, more precisely the notion of a narrative translated, is in fact a recurrent concern in my work. I actually often consider my work as a series of unfaithful subtitles that move too slow or too quickly, or that actually don't fully understand the language they are translating, or that get distracted and start telling other stories, making different connections, etc. I'm interested in how meaning is displaced, in how discursive circumstances are recontextualized through memory, recognition, and the natural opacity of language. In general, I tend to catalog, classify, appropriate, read, misread, and retell. My work often takes an existing text, what I call a pretext, and retells it as a way of transforming discursive practice through repetition. I believe, of course, that the difference is created in these acts of repetition, in these creative infidelities towards a previous text. And it is perhaps these differences, these infidelities towards a source, that constitute the distinction between to repeat and to reduplicate. I ultimately think that the function of repetition in my work signals not necessarily a nostalgic desire to return, but a need to call attention to look at something again, and to look at it differently, from a different place, at a different angle. And perhaps, in a way, that is all that art is, a gesture towards a point of observation for other people to notice, to initiate or continue a dialogue, a conversation, however loosely that term is defined. This, for me, somehow connects with the notion that each artist, through their work, always creates his own precursors, which is another way of saying that through the reworking of the past, each new work inevitably changes not only and hopefully our conception of the future, but our conception of the past. This provides an interesting framework through which to look and analyze our relation to the past, how the past is written and articulated, how the past enables and determines our possibilities as producers. And as I was just saying, how we rewrite the past with our own work. And I think that if we were to take this idea to its extreme, what it ultimately proposes is the possibility of thinking about art as a form of art history. Adorno summarizes all this in saying, art wills what has never existed so far, but at the same time, all art is one big déjà vu, for the past looms over everything. So this is an installation view of a work called Index from 2000, and it is an index of a book I haven't yet written and most probably never will. I think of it as a container or a structure that becomes its own content. This particular index, and I've since gone to make others, was in a way an attempt to produce a book that would include all books, a sort of library in a book or a meta-book. The index is halfway biographical and halfway theory text. It is extremely personal and at the same time hermetic or full of cliches. This is a sample from a page of that index. The indices are an ongoing project that somehow map the development of my interests, readings, and preoccupations, and in this way they've become a form of self-portraiture that unfolds over time. These are an ongoing series of drawings that translate a rather stubborn belief that someday things will change and happiness will occur. The drawings have a somewhat therapeutic dimension, a way of making productive a certain anxiety or discomfort, but they are also clearly a little bit tongue-in-cheek. The text seems to also imply that the idea that life is really elsewhere, outside of art. This is an optimistic wall drawing called Here Comes the Sun, again dealing with clichés of hope or of happiness to come. I'm interested in using these very restrained economical means that create a complete staging that allows us to think about how meaning is felt. These are samples from a work called Flowers that presents documentation of an act or a performance for a public of one. I sent a bouquet of flowers to a selected group of women artists whose work I was interested in or looking at the moment. The piece is ultimately an acknowledgement of debt or a way of nodding to friends or admired influences, but it is also a way of defining an audience, becoming in this way a sort of compilation of affection. This is a work called Fade Out, and it is a single slide of a young woman that is projected continuously until the image fades due to a physical effect produced by the light and heat emanating from the projector. I call this piece an exercise in forgetting. And the performance, as with the persistence of our memories, is undetermined. These are examples of an ongoing series of books I published through Art Resources Transfer, a nonprofit I direct, which has a publishing arm called Art Press and a distribution side in which we distribute free books to public libraries and public schools in underserved communities nationwide. The methodology for the books are that I invite an artist and they select whom they like to have a conversation with, in this way delegating the curatorial responsibility and allowing the series to not only reflect my interests and taste. This is a still from Seyd Isaac, which means Grandfather Isaac in Yiddish. It's a 16mm film transferred to digital in which my grandfather, who's a Holocaust survivor, by way of a script I wrote based on his personal story, explicitly addresses the possibilities, limitations, and responsibilities of testimony. These are stills from a film called Everness. The work speaks of a first love and a loss of innocence and relates them to notions of classic literary tragedy. The work primarily centers around an emotionally handicapped couple at the moment when their inability to access their own passions is articulated through language. These are pages from a book I published in 2004 to coincide with an exhibition where I was showing works that related to translation and the impossibility of a faithful repetition. It's the first ever English translation of Uruguayan poet Idea Vilariño's book Poemas de Amor, and it is a form of appropriation that investigates the potential of literary translation as a visual act. Thanks.